Well, it's time for another episode of Under the Radar with Travis McLeod. I am your host, Travis McLeod, and tonight I have three very special guests on with me: Ralph Rosales, Joe DiStefano, and Jay Tang. And if those names seem familiar to you, then you might recognize them as members of the South Florida band Visionary. Tonight, I had the pleasure of reuniting three out of the five members to really just kind of sit down and talk about how the band came to be and, you know, everything they accomplished and, you know, how it ended, what they've been up to since it ended, and just kind of catch up because, you know, I haven't really talked to these guys, you know, at least not other than Facebook and that kind of stuff in years. So it was great to catch up. You know, unfortunately, Mike and David couldn't make it, but, you know, I feel like we still had a pretty good conversation, and I hope that if you already know about them, that you enjoy the episode, and if you are not familiar with them, that you maybe discover something new tonight. Anyway, that being said, I guess I'll start this off with the... I guess I'll ask Ralph this question first. So, how did you come to join the band?
Well, I guess I could tell a little bit of how I kind of came in when everybody was already kind of get together. It was kind of a funny day. This was coming out of my post Wu-Tang, New York hip hop, you know, just listening to everything at this time in my life, listening to anything from your Korn to Deftones to Wu-Tang to Mobb Deep, and I mean, everything was just coming out at that time. There was so much of a range and a mix of music that was out there, and everybody was pretty much really, I mean, compared to now, really getting along with just showing each other different types and mingling different genres of music. And, you know, I came across meeting, you know, I think it was Mike, maybe. I came across somebody.
I think that's correct. He was the first.
Yeah, we were working at the mall. And came across and I remember just trying out that day and playing around. And then the funny thing, and I don't think the band ever knew this, but we were all leaving after band practice the first day of meeting these guys. And I wasn't really trying to be cool with my car, but I drove out in the middle of Lantana Road, not knowing, and almost getting hit by like five cars. I think my life almost ended that day. It was pretty crazy. But later on that day, I mean, we all hung out and, you know, I ended up becoming part of the band and started practicing with them more. And it was amazing. It was fun. Good, great experience for sure. Well, definitely. They all had a sound for sure in the beginning. You know, when I came in, there was already an established sound and, you know, some already quite a few songs written already. I mean, they were already hitting up the garage, you know, a couple days a week before I even started coming by. But man, I tell you what, man, that house, Jay's mom's house, God bless her, man. I still think today we should have a GoFundMe to pay all the electric bill, maybe like a reimbursement and red soda and snacks we ate and jamming out in that living room, man. Cause I can only imagine me as a parent now letting my kid jam out in a band in the living room. It's pretty crazy.
That was really special. That really was.
Yeah, I mean, most bands don't get that opportunity. You know, they're a garage band or a basement band or whatever. So having a whole living room with AC, that was a plus.
Yeah, mom was like, oh, I moved the couch. All right, you guys rock on. Don't mind me. I'm just making stovetop.
And your neighbor.
I think a couple times we would smell dinner go, and we're like, man. You gotta go home.
But. So jumping into like the genesis of the band, one of the cool things was like, you know, meeting Jay in high school and like developing a friendship, and Jay really influenced like, you know, a lot of the music that I discovered. Like I got into like some bands like Slipknot and Rage Against the Machine because Jay was like really into them and like, you know, that shared interest. And it's Travis, I know you and I kind of shared that with like Green Day and Radish and some other bands that we like really connected on. And that's one of the most beautiful things about playing music is when like other people show you music that's really near and dear to them. And like, even if like it doesn't like completely resonate with you, it's still someone sharing like a part of like their personality with you. And that's like a beautiful thing. And one of the things with Visionary was, you know, writing music that wasn't necessarily things that like I had gone through, or like maybe sounds that like I like, you know, like maybe like not exactly like me myself isolated would write, and like trying to cater to the group as a whole. I thought that was cool. Like, it was always about like the identity of the band, the five of us, and then the six of us when Mike came in. It wasn't about like one person really like sticking out or like taking complete onus of everything. And that's why like on the EP, you'll see it's like, you know, music and lyrics written by Visionary. And I think, you know, going like circling back to Ralph's point, it was really like the collaborative melding of that sound and that core identity from our first song Downstate that we put together from some riffs from Mike, some riffs from me. And like, it just kind of like came together. And from there, like some of the best songs that the band had, Jay had the hand in writing, like
yeah, deep absolutely,
and hang and stuff. So like,
yeah,
it was really cool to see everyone kind of like in the filter of the Visionary sound get to express themselves. Like you hear like my like death metal, thrash metal kind of roots trying to come through on some of the riffs where there's like a lot of palm muting and trying my hardest not to do pinch.
You'd hear Mike and his Mike and his pedals, man, going in his wow world of adding into it. Yeah, definitely.
The fucking dude was more like a synthesizer player sometimes than a guitarist. And like listening back, I haven't heard that music in like fucking 15 years. So first, thank you, Travis, for sending that.
Yeah, that was back pretty interesting. To
it, like, you know, I'm 36. We were like 15, 16 ish, like around there, you know, and
I was a little older. I'm pushing 40 this year. I was a little bit more of the older guy that I would go out. I remember grabbing some Zimas and some Smirnoffs and
fucking
a little bit of what everybody wanted. And that was the thing too with Visionary. I mean, most of the band, you know, they were still just getting out of high school, still living at the house. And I was fucking surviving. I was living off ramen noodles in a little apartment off Point. You know, you guys always remember, you know, it was good times, but you guys definitely.
You were the influencer, Ralph. You were the influencer.
Yeah, Visionary. I mean, essentially, Ralph, Visionary was the sound of underage drinking.
That's true. Remember, Ralph took me. Ralph came over one day. It wasn't a practice day, and he took me to a place called Pimco to get my labrae pierced.
Oh, I remember.
Oh my god!
And I told my mom. I said I was only 17. I said, "Bye, I'm going to go get a hole in my face," and she didn't believe me.
Place and called Ralph Pimco. And I ride out.
Yeah. We ride out to Pimco and I get my labrae pierced and come back. My mom thought I was joking. I was like, she's like, "How did you do that?" I said, "Ralph." Pimco. Knew the guy.
They're still there, bro. They're now tetanus free.
That explains the burn.
Yeah. That little nodule on your labrae.
I still got it.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. Well, definitely. Funny. I've always wanted to know, just because me personally, you know, I branched off doing a couple. I did a few things here and there, and still once in a while, I you know, tap into things. But I've never really joined a band really in full out, you know, play shows like Visionary did. I always wanted to know from the other guys at the band, especially Mike. I wish Mike was here tonight because I wanted to ask him and Joe as well. Moving on to different many bands after Visionary, how do you still remember and look at Visionary compared to the bands that you were in years before and after Visionary? And I always wanted to ask Mike that too. Like, how do you still take Visionary in your heart? Because I always wanted to know that, because I always remember this band. Like, to me, maybe it's because the only band I really played shows and did stuff, I always remember, but that's something I always wanted to know from the other band members for sure.
Yeah, man. I'd be happy to dig into that if you guys don't mind, you know.
Go ahead.
So, you know, first of all, you don't become a fucking human being to your 30s. Like, so, you know, there is a lot of aspects of my person between the ages of like 14 to fucking 29 where, like, you know, they're less than desirable fucking aspects and traits. And, you know, fucking when you look back at some of the animosity and weirdness that the band experienced and like the weird two camp system that we had of Jay, me and Ralph, and then Dave, my white boy, and Mike. And it was like these like separate countries that came together to fucking play music. Like,
it was definitely the United Nations of all high school personalities in one band room.
The most bipolar group ever.
it was interesting, you know, but like looking back on it, like my fucking thoughts are always fond. Like, to me, the one thing that I you know, and it's just one of those things that like it's compromise. Is like, I definitely wanted to see the music go in different directions than where we were at. And I felt like when Glassjaw came out, you know, Mike and Dave really wanted to be Glassjaw, and whatever was trendy was the thing. And I was like, I want to make fucking weird noises that my brain hears, that the reason I can't sleep at night is because in my head it's like, like, I want to get that out so fucking I could sleep. You know?
You were playing Periphery in 1999 in your mind.
Yeah. You're being way too kind, fucking, you know, fucking more like Old Man River, but still shit. Like, fucking, you know, my next band after that, Not For Nothing, was interesting. Fucking the best compliment I got in that band was the singer and sample guy for Still Kept were like, you scream crazier than anyone I've ever heard scream. And hearing that come from Sean, who sounded like he was about to fucking like throw up every time he screamed, that was a fucking nice thing to hear. But, you know, that was me taking some friends that really couldn't play and doing my best to get them to kind of like come together and coalesce. And getting Randy Haberstick on the drums made us sound like a real band until you got to like a live show. And then you had like a 50-50 chance of it's going to sound like there's five people playing the same song, or there's going to be five people playing different songs, and you just have to fucking go with the drummer as the vocalist and, you know, hope it works out. So that band was a fucking mess, and my ego was a mess at that point too. You know, I was doing a lot of fucking drugs. Like, at the point that I quit Visionary, I ate acid for like 100 days straight and was skipping school and going to that kid Dan Bertram's house, because his mom's boyfriend Harry, he would like shoot up and drink O'Doul's and shit, and he would fucking put on Yes records and Beatles records and show me his picture of him hanging out with Aerosmith, and I would play Dan's drum set tripping on acid while this old guy is on heroin fucking drunk and shit. And so
there's nothing wrong with Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, dude, like, he fucking opened me up to like where I thought I knew classic rock. He took me down like into the deep, dark, murky abyss of like fucking like weird bands like Puzzle and shit, like bands that you don't fucking normally hear like or ever heard on rotation on like fucking. So like that was like a whole different thing. And you know, like, I wanted to just play heavier music. So then after that, I was with the People Upstairs. That was a connection from Ralph. His cousins are in that band, and when I was in,
today
they're still playing, man. I talk to Casey every now and
still
again,
still jamming shows. They've changed a lot of people. I mean, they're in and out, but really the foundation of Casey Buckley and Tony playing the bass, I guess recently my cousin Gabriel is no longer with them, right? I think.
Yeah, I think Gabe might have moved on, and they have that other dude playing the
drums. Works for my cousin now works for WRMF, our radio, one of these local radio stations out here. But yeah, for sure, they're still jamming. They're still rocking every bar here in West Palm, Fort Lauderdale, and still doing the thing, you know, still playing a lot of their own songs and still some covers, I guess. So that's
cool. Yeah, they're still at it. I've seen them a couple times in the past couple years and, you know, still connect with them. You know, that was a really interesting thing, because I'd never been in a bar band, and the stamina to play for 3-4 hours and play multiple sets while you're fucking drinking and doing drugs was like, it was a different tax on my body. Like, Visionary was you play for 30 minutes, then the band that everyone wanted to see goes and play, and then fucking we would go get loaded and shit and fucking go sneak a smoke somewhere, fucking go get drunk. You know, so like, you go into like Miami Lauderdale, like at Fat Cats at 3 a.m, you're going to see some parts of humanity that are fucked up, bro. Like, fuck, especially Lauderdale and Miami. Fuck yeah, dude. Fucking like, even Clematis at like 1 a.m. is scary. God. So,
yeah, I had an incident at Spanky's at one of our shows. Some guy was at the urinal next to me sniffing cocaine off of it. Asked me if I wanted a bump while I'm pissing. I'm good. Oh.
Consummate gentleman. So
that set would have been in like double time that night. It's like, dude, why is Jay playing so fast?
Double time, what's that?
So speaking of shows, You guys played your first show at Sound Splash, wasn't it?
Yep. Wow. Yeah, it smelled like model airplane glue.
Still got pictures of that place. Really yeah. cool place. That those were like hidden gems of West Palm back in the day. I mean, the place was a wall-to-wall speaker, a wall-to-wall record place. I mean, you can just touch the wall, and it was filled with records. And we played there with Simple Kill, right? Or Still Cap?
I think it was – I have the flyer somewhere.
I think it was Simple Kill that we played with, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think it was Simple Kill. Because they had that manager, the big guy, the big Spanish guy. That you would see him in the mosh pit at every show you would go in West Palm. I don't know his name. But he did a lot for Still Cap, I think.
Yeah,
at the time he was like their little manager. But yeah, they rocked. They were pretty good.
That show was interesting because Dave was playing with sunglasses on and no shoes for the first time inside. I think he was getting over something.
He was breaking his cherry that night, dude, for sure.
That was kind of his thing to not wear shoes, right?
That became a trademark of his. Whenever he wore shoes, we kind of questioned it. So it was a very odd thing to see. But it was.
Did he ever take like 12 to 150 volts or anything? Did he ever take any? Did he ever zap himself doing that?
Probably. We just never heard about it. That's why it was always quiet.
Yeah, I figure a guy like him would just kind of like keep that to the chest if he got electrocuted.
Yeah.
He wouldn't want to bother
like
nobody.
That's what made our band, though. When, like you guys were saying,
he improvised. No, he didn't. He was getting shocked.
So how did that show come up? Like who started booking you guys?
Oh gosh, I want to say Mike because he had connections already from Prolong. You know, he was
Groove Nicks.
He was friends with Jim from the Groove Nicks.
I remember Jim helped y'all out a lot in the beginning.
He was really connected with Jim.
He knew people in other bands, so he kind of knew that whole outlet of people. He had that network already established, so we didn't. Because Prolong played shows all over the place, you know, for a little while. So Mike had this connection, so he knew how to do it. He knew how to process everything and present it and get us shows. I mean, he was the guy that made the majority of the flyers. I mean,
Yeah, because he was a graphic design student at the time.
Yeah.
You know, and partly, anyway. Yeah, I remember being that kind of amazed because, you know, we had all played together and we, you know, just jammed out at our houses and we're all like, man, how do you play shows? How do you do it? What do you do? I don't even know how this works. It's like you got to know someone who knows someone and then you get in. You know.
Well, that was the network of Visionary. I mean, Visionary had, I mean, we had someone like Mike that was a technician in the graphic design business getting his feet wet in that, and he was making our flyers all day, making stickers and merch. And then we had, you know, Jay, where his mom was the coolest chick in town and let us play and use the house as an actual studio, you know, to jam out whatever we had to do. You know, Joe had the you know, the mind of the musician, knowing notes and how to show everybody how to, you know, play that song properly or to play it in time. Almost like, I mean, I gotta say, I mean, to me, Joe, you were kind of like all of our music teacher in this band a little bit when it came down to me a little bit, you know, getting things right and, you know, putting it together a little, you know, making a song that Jay made, but finishing it and completing
another
it,
layer.
Putting it together.
Yeah, the layers of things.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool.
I mean, I owe a lot to Joe because, like, I self-taught myself on drums, and he'd get on the kit and be like, check this out.
Yeah.
And it would be, like, an off-tempo sounding drum piece, but it fit because he would write a bass line and show David. David would play around with it, and then he just went over with layers of different sounds, and then Mike would come in. It was just, you know, Joe's very, very well-rounded as a musician. I mean, you're, you know, a Renaissance man when it comes to music, Joe. Whether you want to hear it or not, but
for sure.
That's what I consider you as. You're like well-rounded, you know, musician, and you know, I'm grateful that you know you showed us. I mean, even from the lyrical aspect, I mean, you got Ralph to do some crazy shit, and even in the studio when we did the EP,
I was just, I mean, that was literally just the voice and learning and getting into it and. you know, you were throwing it in. You were like, dude, this is what it's going to sound like, man. This is what you want this lyric to sound like. And yep. it would come together perfect. And we would go on for hours and going over it in your patio at your dad, you know, at your house by the pool or wherever at my apartment, going over songs day after day, printing shit out. I mean, we really, as a band at that time, you know, for our age and for what was going on, and we really had a network to become what we became and threw ourselves out there. I mean, as I was thinking about it now, and I show my kid videos. I mean, a lot of us has a little bit of memories to show, but man, I've showed videos of us playing with the same show at Poison the Well and some other bands.
Wow.
And playing in Fort Lauderdale with the group. Groovniks. We would open up their CD release parties with other bands in Fort Lauderdale. And for a little band that we were at the time, we really got around, you know, a little bit, I think. What?
Darwin's Waiting Room?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Kelsey Club. Yeah, that was
Twice
great.
The Sun. I still go on YouTube and look up Twice the Sun songs. And,
me too.
And Mine Like Water. And what was the band? What was that group? What Wishes Can't Mend? You know, the dude that worked at the music store in Boynton Mall.
Sunday Morning Mass.
You know, it's funny.
Sick.
The bass player from What Wishes Can't Mend is in my current business, and he also works under me at my regular job, and he was the bass player in the Toilets. Wow. So, and we didn't figure it out that we had played shows together until, like, we'd been together in a band for, like, 2 years. And he's like, oh, you were in Visionary? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, I was in What Wishes Can't Mend. I'm like, oh. I'm like, fucking, you look like Wolverine. He's like, yeah, you were still fat and stuff, but you didn't have tattoos. And I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, fucking totally, dude. Like, that was pretty much it.
He did look like Wolverine. Holy shit.
You know, it's crazy, man. Like, I really appreciate everything that you guys said. And, like, you know, first and foremost, everybody had, like, a tremendous amount of innate talent. And I think everyone had something they wanted to express and something that they wanted to say. And, you know, the scary thing about directing traffic, and it's what I do for a living, like with both my businesses, is like being an asshole while you're trying to like pursue the end goal, right? And you know, I really appreciate that I had a group of friends, and I mean that from the bottom of my heart, like a group of friends that, you know, we always knew like it was about the music more than anything, and about hearing a sound that made all of us go like fuck yeah, like
whoa,
when we listened back to the CD the first time and we got goosebumps in the Camaro going back home from Port St. Lucie from Avalon, like that's something I'll never forget. And it was because we got the sound that we'd been, you know, tooling from. And you know, like I appreciate it, but it wasn't all one-sided. There was definitely things that Jay, Mike, Dave, like Ralph, like all of you guys that like, you know, this would sound better, or if we did this, like, you know. And that was great. Like, I honestly think for I could speak maybe for like, you know, the younger people in the band, you know, Jay, Mike, you know, and I, you know, that like, it taught me how to like function as a team and, you know, working as an adult and, you know, like being able to like, you know, when you're like 16, 15, like, you know, your ego is huge because you're the center of your universe. You're still sheltered for mommy and daddy and shit. And it's a completely like different mindset than an adult, which is like humbled by the fucking harsh shittiness of the world we live in. Right. Mm-hmm. So like, I think that really, helped prepare me like just for working in a group with diverse people who have different thoughts and different ideas and being able to coexist and like, you know, making something that like, you know, people still fucking remember it. Like maybe not they a do. Lot of people.
I still, I mean, gosh, that's funny that you said that. Cause, man, this was like about 2 years ago. And I was somewhere in Jacksonville, Cocoa Beach or something like that. Saw someone with a Visionary shirt, one of the red ones.
Holy shit.
They must have purchased it at like a secondhand store.
Goodwill.
But I was like, and I was like, oh, that's a band that I was in. And she's like, no, it's an artist or something. I'm like, okay. You know, she was younger. So I was like, ew, I don't want to like say, no, that's my band. I didn't want to like grab it. It was funny, man. I was like,
I'll show you my MySpace.
Yeah. But it was like an old Visionary shirt. So yeah.
That's hysterical, dude. How weird.
Yeah. And then another thing is I have friends. I mean, just still here in South Florida, I mean, you'll see, oh, you were in the band Visionary. And I'm like, yeah, that was cool, you know. You'll still see people that recognize you from, you know, from a long time ago.
Yeah, for sure. I went to the Wayback Machine the other night. You can still see the old website.
Ah. Oh, really?
Holy fuck.
With the visionary50megs.com or whatever it was.
That, well, yeah. That website caused a lot of fucking trouble.
I think by this time it was a website. Visionary band or whatever. But...
I'm innocent, motherfucker. I would admit
it has nothing to do with the elections.
I'm a grown man. I fucking admit to you. I would have admitted then if I fucking said some shit. I fucking felt like that was such a horrible thing.
What, on the guest book?
Well, yeah, fucking someone wrote some fucking horrid shit about Mike's mom, and Mike fucking totally thought that I did it because I just left the band.
See, I never knew about this. Was this MySpace?
So I've heard multiple people, I've heard multiple stories of like who the perpetrator was. I'm not going to throw anyone under the bus.
Throw them under the bus. Myself. Do it.
Fucking CW. So that was what I fucking heard. So that's the best you'll get from me is CW. So fucking, it's like The Simpsons when who shot Mr. Burns, right?
I hate fucking, the CW. They got stupid shows.
But like, dude, fucking Mike and I, like, fucking, we're diametric opposites in a lot of ways. Like, fucking, he cares about his appearance. I'm a fucking slob. Fucking, he had to have like new guitar strings. Mine could be fucking rusted over as long as they fucking stood in tune enough. Like just fucking very different ways of fucking approaching life and just personalities. But I never had issue with him. Like, I loved Mike. Fucking, he was like, he dyed my hair. Fucking, I had foo-foo rainbow colored hair. Fucking, if you're listening to this, this is a fucking true fucking statement. I look like Rainbow Bright or like a Light Bright fucking, but like a big fat one.
You look like Tekashi 6ix9ine.
Yeah, I'm way ahead of my time, bro. Way ahead of my time. Fucking, I was the original fuckboy, bro. Fucking, 100%, bro. So...
I remember like, some of that guest book drama, though. Wasn't somebody would just go in there and write, like, Anonymous Surfer or something and just say whatever they
wanted? Yes, that was it. Anonymous Surfer. Yeah. So then I, like, fucking Mike called me up all pissed off and was yelling at me. And then his mom called. And I'm like, I don't know what you fucking people are talking about. Like, I go to your house and hang out. Like, why would I do that?
Yeah.
Like, and he's like, because you left the band. It was such a fucking
well, Remember, guys. Well, I won't say any names, but we had a lot of... Hold on. We had a lot of friends that hung out in the band that loved to just trigger and start and instigate things and play along and all that crazy shit.
It was two camps. It was because of the two camp system. It was like Republicans and Democrats, bro. We had a two party system in our band. And like when they had that rolling party, I'll never forget that. They had the rolling party. And we're like, what can we do to ruin their good time? And they fucking wrapped me up in tinfoil and put a motorcycle helmet on me.
Okay, here's the story.
With a big metal dick.
I'm going to rewind. I'm going to rewind this story. This is the best story ever, and I'm going to say it. It's recorded. Everybody could come in on it because everybody was a part of it. I wish, you know, at the same time, I wish Brian was here now because Brian was a big part of Visionary. Not only lugging half of our shit after the shows and before the shows and couple other people doing the same thing, you know. They should be here too, involved with this conversation because, like I said, they were part of the band. But man, that night, there was a night where, you know, we had our different groups in the band. We were, at the end of the day, when we were on stage, we were like brothers, and we all linked that one. You could look at each other, you could see in one eyes and say, "Oh, I messed up. Let's start all over. Let's do this." I mean, you could see the music and the tempo change. Just by an eyesight and just by looking at each other, we could figure it out, you know, and fix it. So, like, but when it was off stage, you know, we had that little separation a little bit sometimes. And one night, I guess there was a party at Mike's house, and they were all enjoying their time, partaking in some things. And that day, we were working at my Funky Fish store in the Boynton Mall. And we're like, you know, we're not invited, but, you know, let's just all go to my house. My house was the place to go. There was always a beer. You know, you could always piss in my cat litter box, Jay. You know, like, you know, there was always a, it was always a place to go. And we're like, we all got together that night and we're like, you know what? Let's go. They should be in the middle of their enjoying this party. Let's go dress Joe up in foil. And as Mr. Roboto, we put a motorcycle helmet on.
wrapped his body in foil from the head up and down, put a big cock, a big foil cock on
it. Big foil penis.
And pictures. Man, we got in the car. We drove. Joe's in there like, oh! Joe's just making noises in the car, the back of the Monte Carlo. And we finally get there. And I don't know who had a system, or we played Mr. Roboto and real loud, barged in the house, started playing that song, and Joe walks in. It walks right through, and everybody's freaking out. I mean, I don't know, Jay, what else happened?
There's all these teenagers on fucking ecstasy, fucking like rolling with fucking glow sticks, rubbing fucking Vips rape rub all over each other and shit. And I came in. I was the weird one.
You are the ultimate man.
He walks through the house, and he said there was somebody with a pacifier in their mouth who just stopped, blank stared at him, and couldn't believe what he was seeing because they had all the lights going on and stuff and music, and he just walks through doing the Roboto dance and just goes through the living room and out the back door.
Techno man, bro.
At the end of the day, we all ended up mingling in with the party, and we all ended up chilling that night, I guess.
Yeah, Mike was really, really fucking upset, though. Like, dude, you want to know, one of the most fucked up things was, like,
Lisa. We must have blocked the orgy, man. We must have missed out. We were talking about everybody. The orgy.
So is anybody in some music now, or what?
No.
Yeah, I'm playing music.
Last time I played music was, I was technically the last Visionary member to leave before Mike took off with Leaving the Heroes. That was after I moved to Stewart. I used to drive from Stewart all the way down to Boynton and practice with them for probably 4 months after Visionary pretty much disbanded. And I just couldn't do it anymore. So I was the last one out. They got a drummer, and then they took off. And then I kind of tried to form something up here with some guy who was into like Nine Inch Nails and Slayer, and he kind of like combined it. It was really weird. I did that for a few months, and that was pretty much it. I mean, other than that, I just kind of jam out on my own and, you know, record shitty demos of stuff, record my ideas, and
that's cool.
I miss playing. I mean, I surely do, man. I really miss that feeling, the whole rush.
Oh yeah,
I've never experienced that since the Visionary days. So I'm pretty stagnant right now. That's where I'm at with music.
You know, with the technology though, you can make an album with people from anywhere.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's
people are doing it now with the quarantine.
Just throwing it out there, fellas.
Yeah, yeah, I'm trying to work something right now. There's you guys know John Ivey. Right now he's, you know, he's sending me a couple of tracks of what they're working on, and you know, he's like, oh, curious to hear what you sound like these days. So right now I'm personally trying to come up with the technology to properly record what I have going on and put it into his music. But I'm just, you know, I'm behind, man. I've turned into a boat mechanic, you know, fiberglass restoration boat captain, you know. So it's music is, you know, the guitars are still in the house, keyboard's still there, my kid still jams, my wife sings, you know, and I still dabble with music here and there. But, you know, like Jay, you know, I definitely, something to jam out is something, you know, going out and playing a live show would be great. You know, I'd be so down for something.
Yeah. I've played in a lot of bands since Visionary. I've played a lot of music. Fucking, I kind of got into it a little bit before, you know, after People Upstairs, I just couldn't play a bar band anymore. I wanted to make original music, and because we played 311 covers all the time and shit like that, I was like all the way on the other side. So my next band was Vaginal Disaster, and it was like a gore grind band, and it was just as offensive as I could make a song, and as horrific as what we set out to do. And that's when I met Rob Bernhardt, who was the bassist from What Wishes Can't Mend, and this guy Brett Ackling, who was a druggie from upstate New York who played drums, and fucking we started jamming, and fucking Vaginal Disaster got really good. But, you know, it just was like, it was ridiculous. And like, you know, after that initial like anger kind of subsided, we started writing like these like punk songs that had elements of like Rush and like other bands in them. And like it was like kind of like, you know, like if Cannibal Corpse jammed with Rush and NOFX was kind of like the crux of it. And so the Toilets was born out of that, and the Toilets was fucking wonderful.
Oh my god, the Toilets.
Yeah, thank you, brother. Like we were a progressive death punk is what we called ourselves if we had to like put it under a but like that was all about like I was watching wrestling a lot at the time, and I wanted to make the heel band. I wanted to make a band that didn't want people to mosh, to not have fun, to fucking like we promoted like a lot of like very hard right wing fucking things on stage. Like we like fucking talked about like fucking like we promoted Herman Cain for like a long time. We brought up like banners for Herman Cain. Like it was just to fucking like get a, because we knew that most of the people that we're playing to were like liberal softy like art people that go to like nightclubs. So we wanted to be like this heel band that it's like, are these guys serious?
And what was the cover? What was the cover song that you did? I remember seeing you guys.
So many.
There was not the Land Down Under. Rains Down in Africa.
Africa, yeah. So we did a cover of Africa.
God, I haven't seen Jonah in years, and I'm with my buddy from Chicago. We walk in a Lake Worth bar, and I see the band. They're like, oh, who's playing tonight? And I'm at the door, and I haven't been. I was just moving back from Jacksonville, and I was living in Lake Worth at the time. And I'm with my girlfriend. I'm with my girlfriend that is my wife now, and I'm with my other friend. And they're like, "Oh, yeah, you're gonna pay $10 to come in." I was like, "Who's playing?" They're like, "Fucking Toilets." I'm like, "Toilets." I was like, "Let's check this shit out, man. The Toilets." And here comes Joe with a guitar, and I'm like, oh, it's Joe. You guys, this is going to be great. We got to see this. We got to stop and see it. And it was. It was the greatest show in a while that I seen a local punk. Good. I mean, you guys sounded like a great, good old 80s, early 90s punk band. I mean, it was nuts. I loved it.
Thank you, man. That's a huge compliment. And it was a really fucking great time because that was the first time in a band I got to basically be the maestro 110%.
Yeah, you were the vocals, man. It was amazing.
and it was my first time fronting a band as a singer, and we wanted to do a trio. I was really obsessed with Rush, and it was Rush and Venom. Like, those were two bands that just kind of blew my mind because there was so much sound. Motorhead was another one. So much sound, just three dudes. And like, so we played a lot of shows. One of the best shows we ever played was with the Murder Junkies, Gigi Allen's band. And their guitar player came up to me. He's like, "Bro, what pedals are you using? Because like, my guitar doesn't sound like that." And so me and him, I ended up giving him a fucking pedal. I gave him a Boss Harmonist because I'm like, that's how I'm doing all the dual leads and triple leads with one guitar. And he's like, "That's the craziest shit I've ever seen." I'm like, "Dude, you're a grown man. Like, you can look at a website and go find Boss pedals, bro. Like, it's all good." So. When I was in in the Toilets, I got fucking picked by this country band of all things. And they said, "We got a gig. You just start on tour in Kansas, of all places. And you have 3 days to learn 25 songs and just hop on a plane and meet some dudes." So I was like, "What?" And so they're like, "It pays $1,700 a day plus $300 per diem." So I told the Toilets I have to take a break. I'm going to go play for this country band. And in 3 days, I learned their 25-song set. And they wanted me because I reminded them of Michael Schenker from the Scorpions. And they wanted like these 80s metal kind of like pinch harmonic solos over this pop country music. It was like all pop country. Like, "Crank it, burn them in the truck, like fucking, it was like as fucking hillbilly fucking with like fucking auto-tune. Like, it was fucking ridiculous. So I go and I meet these guys in Kansas at the airport, and it's fucking half of Endorphin was the fucking other guys in the band. So it's like the bass player from Endorphin was the other guitar player. He's the rhythm player. I was the lead player. What? The drummer from Endorphin's the drummer for the fucking band. Fucking then who shows up? My bass player from the Toilets, who I didn't know fucking got called up for this. So now the both of us are at this fucking thing.
So he's like, "Oh, you gotta take a break, huh? You fucking liar."
Rob, we weren't really fucking playing too much. So Rob was kind of quiet. Rob's like the kind of dude that like he'll be around every day for like a month and then you don't see him for two. So like fucking we were just like had a lull. I was dating some girl for a little bit that like wasn't so keen on me playing in bars every fucking weekend. because she's like fucking, she had like owned a business and shit, and I owned like a pound of weed. So like fucking, there was like a big divide there. So I had to fucking meet different criteria that I wasn't willing to meet. So I went on this country tour after I broke up with her, and fucking dude, I fucking had the most amazing experience. I played, our first show was at a fucking monster truck rally. Demolition car rally, not monster truck. And it was on the back of an 18-wheeler, and there was 10,000 people in the middle of this field in Kansas. And there was this kid in the front row that was handicapped, and his parents like lifted him up during the show to like let him see. So I just went up there with my guitar and started playing a solo, and he strummed my guitar and shit, and fucking all these people started crying. And I was like, whoa, I'm like, this music sucks, but like, this is a really powerful experience to be, to like be playing in front of this many people and get that reaction. Like, I'm some fucking schlub that jerked off in the hotel fucking 20 minutes ago, and fucking like, they're all having this good time. And we ended up going and playing fucking 300 dates of shows and stuff. And he ended up like the pay scale just kept getting less and less and less, and fucking, you know, I didn't like the music at all, and you couldn't write any music. It was all music coming from some other writer, some fucking, they were buying songs from fucking song mills. So, you know, after that, I was, you know, was kind of relegated to doing fucking acoustic gigs at bars and shit. And that's when I was like, fuck it, man. Like, I've always wanted to record. I've done live music and never really learned anything about recording music my whole life. Let me try to change gears. And my friend Andrew and I started a group called Writers on the Waste. And it was like a Fallout-inspired country soul band. And we wrote a concept album and recorded it, where it was like vignettes of voice acting that tells this story in like this post-apocalyptic wasteland and shit. And it kind of like brings you through all these different songs, and a lot of it's like soul music and fucking country, like just straight twangy fucking like old school, like fucking Johnny Cash, Hank Williams kind of country. And, you know, talking about fucking shooting people after the apocalypse to fucking like steal gasoline to get to where you're going. So that was fun. And I got my fucking hands wet with like playing drums and recording them, and then recording the keyboard and recording the guitar and the fucking like all the instruments, and then doing the vocals. And right now what I'm working on is I have I resurrected the name Not For Nothing, and I'm doing an instrumental metal album. Where it's less about lead work, and it's just more about atmospheric metal that kind of takes you to fucking different emotions. Like, some of the songs in my head, like, you know, when I was writing the riffs, was like imagining like a samurai in battle and just like liquidiously running through people with their sword and like killing like hundreds, but they're just doing this fluid motion, like kind of like when you like see a snake slither and shit. So like really esoteric weird shit's where like my music's been coming from lately. And I've been really keen on doing instrumentals because the world's so fucked up, you know, what I have to say probably doesn't matter. So if I can make music that fucking makes you at least fucking feel something, that's good enough for me.
I've been listening to what you've been posting, your instrumental stuff, and dude, good shit.
Thank you, brother. And I'm really humbled, man. Like, you know, I always feel like, you know, like life's like an RPG to me, right? And, you know, I feel like I couldn't be at this level of the game if I didn't play the level of the game with you guys, you know? And that experience carries with me and everything. Like, I mean, dude, I still play visionary riffs. Like, I still, when I pick up my guitar, I'll fucking hammer out a few riffs and I'll fucking like think about you guys. So it's, if, you know, circling back to what you said, Ralph, like, you know, think very fondly of it, man.
Oh yeah, man. That's definitely now, like, I'm searching more in the progressive metal and rock and everything. And you know, there's a lot out there. I've realized our scene that we left off in is overseas right now, in Europe and England and a lot of this, you know, post hardcore sound. I mean, just the stuff that we had at the time, you know, I noticed that years later, that sound still coming out in international stuff. So like, I'm listening to a different kind of vibe with the progressive rock. But my thing is, it's so hard to find a band that needs vocals in a progressive band, because most of them are just drums and, you know, guitars and stuff. So,
I have an offer, Ralph. Here's my offer, right? I will, send you the links for the gear that you need to get set up, and I'll FaceTime you like we're doing now, and I'll show you how to get set up to record vocals.
Yeah, and for sure.
I'll send you a couple of my songs, and if you feel anything and you feel like you have something to fucking say over them, have at it. Fucking.
And not just that. I mean, I got a couple guys as well. You know, like I was telling you, John, he's got some songs for me written. You know, just with the music, and he's like, "I need you to record something." And I'm like, "Man, I cannot find the technology and find out how to do it properly yet." Because
I had the same aversions, brother. Like, I wasn't very technologically minded. I've always been a performer, and I've really scaled back that side of my personality a lot to where, like, you know, like stand up comedy was actually the big thing I think that made me fucking chill out as a human being. Because I never felt anxiety on stage playing music. Like, I always felt very comfortable. When I started doing stand-up, it was very uncomfortable. Like, the first time I did, like, a 15-minute set, my fucking, like fuck, every minute felt like an hour. So, like, when I jumped into to the music production stuff, YouTube is the greatest fucking friend you have, bro. If you have a friend that can point you to the gear and some YouTube videos, that's what I did, is I fucking, like, and now, like, the stuff that you're hearing from, like, the Not For Nothing and, like, the stuff on my page, like, I self-produced that, dude, and, like, it's still, like, works in progress, but it sounds like music. So, like, fucking, it's not as mystical as some people make it. Like, yeah, to make it sound like fucking shit you hear on the radio, fucking crisp, it's a different set of gear, but to make a good-sounding recording, you don't need that much.
Yeah, right on. Cool, man.
So, we've covered what everybody's been up to since Visionary. I'm going to jump back into, like, when you were in the band. Do y'all remember when you first, like, when was the first time you realized you were starting to, it was starting to gel, you were starting to get, like, well-known and whatnot?
God.
Is there, like, a central point?
I would say the first time we played Ovation was a fucking very pivotal point, because, like, we'd never played on a stage that tall. And to that many people in a venue that big, and to communicate across a stage that large when you're used to playing in a fucking living room that's, like, you know, 750 square feet,
right.
You know, it like, you know, making sure everything's on time, having monitors like that,
a whole new thing.
Yeah.
You know, and getting compliments from bands like Endorphin and Still Kept and bands that didn't share a musical fucking, like thread with us, like Still Kept was way heavier and more esoteric than Visionary. Scars of Life, Mind Like Water, and to get validation from people that we looked up to in the scene, as fucking corny as that sounds, like, you know, it really, like, the fact that we got to record at Avalon Studios with Mind Like Water and John Cheadle did such a great job fucking record, like, taking us and making us sound fucking like that. Like, I was listening to that yesterday and going, like, fucking, like, that was recorded so many years ago, man, and it's still
sounded great. Yeah, it's still
like, yeah, your drums, your fucking cheap fucking drum set fucking sounded like fucking
your bass. Yeah, your bass hit
unbelievable.
Yeah, I remember. I mean,
that bass.
Yeah, that was that's a good sound, man. My time was when I was going down to Fort Lauderdale. We went to see Chevelle, and I was with a group of people, and we were down at the I don't know if it's called the Jackie Gleason or whatever it was. I don't know. Not Fort Lauderdale.
Sunrise.
Somewhere, the culture or somewhere. And I'm at the door. And I'm at the door getting ready to go in. And there's a big line and the show's about to start. And I'm walking in and the guy at the door goes, "Oh, he comes in, man. He's in that one band that plays, man. They were here 2 weeks ago playing or something." It was probably the Culture Room because we played at the Culture Room. And it was really neat. It was like, wow, I felt like that was neat. Like, wow, people remember me. You know, that was it was a great experience.
Man, that the shows at Club Ovation or Orbit or whatever it was called, because we played one of those both.
Yeah.
It was intimidating hearing yourself through monitors playing like that, just everything. I mean, it was weird to hear Ralph's voice coming out of a speaker next to my snare drum, Joe's solo was coming out of another speaker.
Hell yeah.
I mean, it was fucking crazy. Doing sound checks? I mean, who does sound checks like that? I mean, I'm boom. I can feel that shit. I mean, it was just we were so used to being unmiked and playing raw sometimes, you know? It was just So I mean that setup was just crazy. You know, Dawn of the Rock Fest and there's just so many different festivals that were at that venue alone. So the culture room was great. Remember we played at the Chili Pepper?
Yep.
That was a weird setup. That was a deep pit for people to stand in.
Yeah, the 9-foot stage.
Good God, yeah, it was like you fall off, you're dead. You look like the pit from Mortal Kombat. Everyone's looking out, but they're all stuck.
Ugh. You're gonna let the dog out here. One of the best times ever, I think, was the Fort Myers show, guys.
Oh God,
dude!
The Fort Myers show.
Tampons on my car with jelly.
I think I was on stage with a pitcher that night. I sprained my ankle. I think we bought a nickel bag at Checkers drive-through.
Jay and I smoked weed in the stranger's car that night, and it made us fucking go sideways, bro.
No, it was Chris's car.
We got that shitty hotel, and Joe's laying on the floor watching TV, and I light up a joint, and he just, like, instantaneously pops up and looks at me like, yo, well, let me hit that shit. And I remember getting a phone call early in the morning, somebody playing... You know, saying that they're like the office manager that my car's been vandalized. And I go out there, and Ralph and his little trio decided to put maxi pads with jelly all over my car. I'm out there in my underwear, half fucking drunk still. And
dude, I forgot about that.
Yeah, you guys fucked up my car a little bit. It's funny.
So when you were playing Orbit,
that was in Cape Coral.
That would have been like with the Groovniks, right? Like, probably got you into Orbit.
Yes.
Is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Ovation. Yeah, it was the non-point. It was like I remember Poison the Well played that show because Poison the Well started playing at the end of our song, and I was like, "Who the hell's playing of our music?" And they're like, "That's Poison the Well starting on the other stage." And I'm like, "Oh okay."
It was your CD release for Tear for the Red.
Yeah. That was a big show. we played the Groovnik song Chopsticks. We started playing that at one of the shows at Ovation.
Yes, I do.
They were like, cool, they were going to play right after us, and we're starting to play like one of their like singles, and yeah, that was fucked up.
Now, to me, I always feel like those times were great because, I mean, believe it or not, and half the time we were listening to just the same crap all day long, but they advertised local venues and shows and on local radio stations with
Native Noise.
You know, there was local bands that were on like every Sunday, and you got to know who was playing this week. And I guess now times have changed, you know, with music and to find out when to go to a show. But man, having local radio stations was the best thing to find out where to go and who was new in town and what festival was coming. Cause now here in, I mean, South Florida now, I mean, I don't know how it is up north on the West Coast or where you guys live, but I know now down south, I don't really know what's going on until, you know, I go in line online and really start digging deep on the bands that I like and find out, oh, wow, Ginger was just playing at, what do you call it? Ginger played, I love that band, Ginger. They played at what's that place right next to Spanky's?
Respectables.
Yeah, they played at Respectables. They played at Respectables. I was like, oh my God, I could have been right there watching her sing at Respectables right in front, but I didn't know that show was going on. And maybe it's just because, you know, the coming with times. But man, that was pretty cool to have that radio station vibe.
Came from a time where it was more personal to promote your band because we had to work to get people to come to our shows, handing out flyers, going to shows and just like word of mouth. You know, there was no like my Facebook page or like my Instagram.
Yeah, but I think Mike would have had that on lock. You know, Mike and a couple other people in the band would have had that taken care of, I think.
But we worked our asses off to get shows promoted by walking around other shows or going to Hot Topic or posting, you know, all over town these flyers. Mm-hmm. And you know, we were like the last part of that process before the internet took off in its ways. And you know, nobody does flyers anymore. I mean, it's all digital.
Yeah,
you know?
It's such a different fucking game, bro.
But it was so personal to do that, and I'm glad we were able to do that and be more personal with people rather than, hey, here's an invite, like my page, or you're suggested, you know, from another band.
Like me and come see me, yeah.
You know, and people took a chance back then. They'd go to local shows just to go to a show.
They pay that $5, $10 cover and say, is this guy, are these guys good or what? You know,
they're out of $5 and they suck. Now you can get a clip of their shows and shit, and they're like, I just won't go because I didn't like them. But, you know, it's different times. I'm glad we were able to experience that because, like, not many bands can say, hey, I used to pass out flyers and it was still personal.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I miss about music in general. It's just everything's a click away and it just kind of takes away from it. You know, 'cause everything.
Do you remember it turned into dependability? What was that band we always wanted to call and they would always show up just to open up for us? They played at every show. Huh?
Travis McCloud, the guy that always opened up for us.
No.
That
other band.
Was at all the shows.
No, there was a band they played. You could say, oh, who can open up this show? And they would be there on time, geared up, ready to fucking rock. And everybody would make fun of them, but they would rock. They would be there. They would fucking rip the house. Whether they're the last band at the end of the night after everybody's leaving.
You're talking about 3DM?
No. They were a crazy band, man. They were from Green Acres.
God.
Not Stockbreed. They were called like.
Oh shit, Stockbreed.
I don't know. They were called.
I drank so much back then. It's a blur.
Yeah, I don't remember. Like, I remember like a few bands. Like, I remember fucking Gargamel. They were great.
They're still playing.
Oh, the Orlando band, Gargamel. Yeah,
Gargamel's still doing their shit, man.
Yep.
Man, Daddy's still.
They played with Groovniks a little while ago, didn't they, in Orlando?
Yeah, they did a weird reunion show in Orlando, and Man Daddy looks exactly the same.
Wow.
He wears the same shit. It's so...
Well, you can't get balder, so as long as he fucking keeps his shape and shit and fucking puts a little cocoa butter on it, it's fine.
Because I was following them online. I was like, holy shit. It's like they never left the 2000s.
Yeah, man. I mean, fucking... The nostalgia is fucking great for some people. You know, fucking, it all depends, man. Some people like really put a lot into nostalgia.
Like, I'm following Scars of Life, and they're like giving little hints that they're starting to work on shit again. So,
really?
Yeah, they did that back in 2013, too.
Didn't they do some UFC shit?
What's up? Yeah.
They did some Ultimate Fighting UFC shit for a while.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So what questions you got, Travis?
Yeah, Travis.
Yeah. I know you want to know.
I'm slacking, man.
Take over your podcast there, Travis.
I'm just like, I'm just going to let him ride. Is that some good stories?
We're all talking and yapping away and drinking Modelo's. I'm drinking whatever's in the 4th of July cooler. I'm not really a drinker anymore, but this past weekend, I'm just finishing what's in the cooler. I'm off the next few days, so fuck it.
A utilitarian drinker. I love it.
There you go.
I was trying to think of like an arc, you know, where we'd start how you started out when you first started Nudist, you got big, maybe like the biggest thing you did, the demise, if you want to call it a demise. I don't know. Like,
we're all over the place right now.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. The biggest thing probably would be recording that EP and would you open it up for Poison the Well? And
that whole scene, that situation, recording that EP was we did it in one day.
Yeah.
And I did all my drums in one take and then I just chilled the rest of it.
Yeah, it sounds fantastic.
And, it was just, well, I looked at the drumming as if I fuck up, I want it to be as pure as possible. And
Jay, we were on a fucking budget, man. We didn't have that much time.
Yeah, but there were some parts I messed up on.
Right.
I'm going to leave those parts as is because that's just what I played.
Yeah.
And then I just, because like Mike was about going over certain parts over and over and over again, and which was fine, but I felt my parts were more organic and I was pleased with them, even though I knew I fucked up somewhere. And
you were first, right?
Yeah, well, I was playing with like Joe for like part of a song, and then most of it was without like most of you guys, and then you were doing your thing, and it was an interesting experience to do that, have the quality, the product that was produced, and then the time frame we did it in, because it was just, that was crazy. I mean, we drove all the way up to Port St. Lucie, spent the whole day, left, it was dark, you know, and
it was awesome. It was a good experience. I think we did great. I remember when we played that CD. I think, did we play it on the way home?
Yeah, that's all we listened to.
Shit, that came from us. And let's keep doing it. Let's keep going. Let's keep rocking out. Let's start playing shows. And yep. And Mike was big, man. That's like, let's sell this fucking merch. Let's sell these shirts.
Yeah,
let's sell these CDs. You know, $5, $10, you know. I remember we got on 94.9 Zeta. Zeta Goes Local. I still have that tape.
Native Noise.
Yeah, Jay and I drove to Fort Lauderdale. Was it just you and me?
I wasn't on that. I wasn't on Native Noise.
Who was it? Just Mike and Joe?
I think it was just you and Joe.
Joe, were you on Native Noise with me in Fort Lauderdale? Remember when it was raining? I had the shits. I had to like go to the bathroom every like 10 minutes on the radio station.
It sounds vaguely familiar.
Yes, we had to go all the way to Fort Lauderdale.
I couldn't go. I was at home listening because I had to work the next
day. It was called Zeta Goes Local. I have it on tape. I actually have a freaking cassette tape with this thing saved in a box. And it's called Zeta Goes Local. And I'm talking about the radio station and about Visionary. And we're playing at, what place were, something called Noise, something Noise in Fort Lauderdale. We played some show. Played with Twice the Sun. And we played with Bender.
Yeah.
There was Bender, Twice the Sun, and they had a song called Angelina or some other stuff. It was like that Fort Lauderdale scene. We were playing a lot of Fort Lauderdale popular shows at the time.
That man, All Is Well with that chick that was fronting it?
Yes, yes. All those Brains. Yeah. A lot of bands were calling us down south to play and open up shows, I remember, at one time.
Yeah, because there was the Chili Pepper. There's a venue called the Button South.
Culture Room. Button South is what we played from the radio station. That's what it was. That was we were promoting that show.
Yeah.
Zeta Goes Local. That was pretty neat.
Yeah. Zeta Goes Local. Native Noise was the buzz, I think. I think the buzz did, 3.1 did the Native Noise where they played Faithful.
Yeah.
And that was on a few weeks in a row. Yeah, I remember you guys on Zeta Goes Local. I remember listening to you guys live.
We started playing shows at the a lot at the Culture Room, not the Culture Room, but the place up north, in West Palm,
the Kelsey Club.
That was a great venue. They remember they accommodated us as soon as we got in that dressing room. They accommodated everything.
Yeah, they had showers, set list on the door.
Remember Travis being backstage? He's like, "You guys got ice and water,
Red Bulls." No, remember they filled it up with water and soda. Fucking Red Bulls.
You think you guys got a mirror with light bulbs above it?
How are you doing this?
Because the reason why is we got real close and we were good friends with the band One. The guitar player from One, him and I became real good friends, and he started loving us to play there. And open up for One.
I remember they had a curtain they were on the stage. Like I thought that was cool. Yeah. It was like real old school, you know.
Yeah, I remember Travis popping his head back there, and he was like, "You guys got a curtain, and like your bathroom's actually clean. It looks like somebody actually maintains it. You got a fucking vibe."
Yeah, fucking rock stars.
That was a good venue. That was a very cool venue. Yeah, we played there with quite a few bands, man. We opened up a lot of shows there. We played right after we came back from Fort Myers. I remember having the flu, and we played acoustic over there.
I've got a recording of that too.
Yeah, I remember you guys
on my computer.
Eventually, had tried to like branch out a little bit and went, I guess, Fort Myers. Didn't you also try to go to Orlando? You played in Orlando at some point.
No, we did not. Central.
Maybe I'm thinking of Fort Myers was a great show. Fort Myers was awesome because that was the night where we played. Like, it was like this like bar that had a few pool tables and shit. And it was with this band that had like a fucking DJ and shit.
It was the other band.
And there was this stranger, like this older dude in there. And Jay and I went off to his car and he had a fucking heady Snodgrass bubbler with a fucking with a silicone tube, and he had some like fucking blueberry kind bun. And we had never seen anything like this in Palm Beach at the time. Like, this was like some nuclear pot. It was like fucking, as soon as he took it out of the little bag, it was going, wee, wobble, wee, wobble, wee, wobble, just like fucking like pulsating. And shit. And so Jay and I are like, are you sure we should do this? And fucking Jay and I are like, fuck it, bro. We don't need our brain cells. Fucking, we play music, bro. And the guy's like, oh, that's great. Fucking, when we went back inside, we were daffy, bro. We were fucking daffy. We were fucked up. I remember like that night fucking like being profoundly like fucking like oppressed.
That was my rock star drunk guy on the stage moment that night. And it fucking rocked. I played it great. I snapped my ankle in half.
It was so fucking night. Amazing, dude.
My drumsticks looked like a rubber pencil. I was like,
sick. Amazing. I mean, we had some badass Fort Myer redneck boys there. It was a crazy hardcore badass. Motherfuckers were pitting. I mean, shit was flying. Dixie chicks. It was
Sarah bottles everywhere. Yeah.
It was nuts. It was a great show, man. Band sounded like Pantera.
Yeah.
Yes, they did. With a DJ. Pantera with a DJ. It was like every band there.
I just remember
someone dressed up in a clown.
Everyone was looking at us. They could tell we were not from there. They're all like, who are these guys? They look like a bunch of city slickers. And then we started playing. They're like, oh, okay.
That boy's hair is made of rope. Fucking, yeah.
Is that their manager, that kid in the Monte Carlo with the gold chain and the Wu-Tang shirt? You know, like, wherever we went, I mean, I got to say, I'm going to say his name because still to this day, he was the best man at my wedding.